you'll see that America is still the land of the free.
Welcome to the Voice of Freedom, your national beacon of liberty. Now, here's your Voice of Freedom, Brent Johnson.
Noted investigative journalist Pat Shannon's thirst for truth was set in motion nearly a half century ago when he began to examine the other side of the news about the JFK assassination, and it has never been quenched. Through the years, he discovered that Americans have seldom been told the whole truth about anything of consequence. He has written a new book, The JFK Assassination and the Uncensored Story of the Two Oswalds, in which he explores one of the true untold aspects of this infamous crime, that there existed two Oswalds, Lee and Harvey, and that those responsible literally got away with murder. Using his inimitable journalistic style, Pat provides the reader with a thought-provoking re-examination of one of the most heinous crimes in American history. After reading this book, you will never again think of the assassination of John F. Kennedy in the same way. Pat Shannon, welcome to the Voice of Freedom.
Hi, Brent. Thank you. And, you know, the last sentence you just said in the intro is absolutely right. And this is the reason for my pursuit. John Armstrong is one responsible for all this research, and I'll give him several pats on the back probably in the next few minutes. But I'm perplexed over the fact that this information has been out for 17 years now. He first reported it at the JFK Lancer meetings in Dallas that are held every November. But his book, Harvey and Lee, a 1,000-page epistle, has been out since 2000. That's 13 years. And you can't find anybody on the street that ever heard of this. The mainstream media won't touch it. That's what bugs me.
Why did you write this book now? Why now?
I've known this information a long time. It wasn't mine. It was a man by the name of John Armstrong who became intrigued with this whole thing back in the 90s. Now, let's back up another 30 years, because in 1966, there was a man by the name of Richard Popkin that wrote a book called The Second Oswald that intrigued us a lot, pointing out that Lee Oswald is speeding up Stemmons Freeway in Dallas with a car salesman going 80 miles an hour, attracting attention to himself. This is in 1961, when not only the Lee Harvey Oswald that we knew was in Russia was already there in 1961, and he never even had a driver's license. This bugged us, and the main one that always bothered me, really, from 1966, is how can a 17-year-old high school dropout join the Marines, go to language school allegedly for 6 weeks in Japan in the Marine Corps, and come out speaking Russian so fluently that when he does migrate to Russia and meets his future wife, Marina, she thinks he's a native. There's something wrong with that picture.
Did you, in the process of writing this book, learn anything new about the assassination? Anything that you had previously not known, and as you're going through your research and as you're writing the book, anything like that?
Yes, certainly, and more than once. Having read John Armstrong's long 1,000-page work, I was aware, more than most people, that this had been going on. But I've since been emailing with him the last few months, and he's pointed out some other things, such as the two Marguerites. Mama was Marguerite. Lee Harvey Oswald was born October the 18th, 1939, of Marguerite. His father had already passed away, and John Armstrong amusingly calls her the taller, better-dressed, more attractive Marguerite, and he calls Harvey's mother the short and dumpy and unattractive Marguerite. Now, that's the one we knew. That's the one that came out after the shooting, of course, of Oswald in the police station, and that was the only Marguerite the public ever knew. Now, you ask me what I had learned new. We realized there had to be two mothers, but what we now are explaining in my new book is that they also had to have somebody that looked like the original Marguerite as well. Harvey and Lee were brought together because Harvey spoke fluent Russian, and apparently when Lee went to New York with his mother for a short time, somebody higher up in the CIA or somewhere began to realize how useful this kid would be. And when he found somebody that looked just like him enough almost to be his twin brother, they said, whoa, what an asset in the Cold War. This is what we believe brought them together 10 years before the assassination of President Kennedy. So obviously they weren't brought together for that reason. They were brought together for something. as all of the sheep dippings are. This is what they call it. So now we've got two Marguerites, and the unusual situation of when Lee and Mom move back into New Orleans, Harvey and his mom move out to Fort Worth. When Lee joins the Marines one year, Harvey joins them the next. And so they constantly kept these people running together, and John Armstrong, Jim Mars, all the real experts over the years, we don't believe that these guys really knew what they were going to be used for. Lee, by early 1963, was obviously part of the plot. He was behind the scenes setting the trap for Harvey.
The driver of the limousine is considered by many to have been the actual shooter. There has even been video evidence to that effect. Is that your conclusion, too?
No. In fact, it's been proven wrong many, many years ago. First one I remember promoting it was Bill Cooper back in 1988. I had his video, and I bought it for a while, I'll have to admit. And you must know that that Zapruder film has been monkeyed with many, many times, even since it left the FBI. But I remember Tupper Saucy and I were watching, and really was convincing because they even showed a puff of smoke coming off of the pistol from the driver's hand. But if you look closely, and you can still do it today on any of these scenes, the driver was William Greer, and he indeed was one who was involved in the plot, and that's proven by the way he's brought the automobile to a stop right there in the kill zone. He turns his head around, but if you'll watch his hands, you'll see both his hands are still on the wheel. And what appears to be the gun actually is Bill Kellerman, who was a special agent in charge sitting in the right seat. He turns around to his left as Greer turns to his right, and it's the actual sun reflecting off of Kellerman's head that appears to be the glistening barrel of the gun in the sunshine, but it's not. The main key there is the fact that Greer's hands never leave the steering wheel, so he cannot be firing a pistol.
Tell us about the two Oswalds. I'll tell you very honestly, I haven't heard about this. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are unfamiliar with this. Why are they significant?
Well, as I began to say back in the early mid-50s, when they were brought together, they knew they were being brought together for something. And man, when you have to also create the hoax of a separate mother traveling with the kid, we can know it's going to be something big. But the significance is that the Lee Harvey Oswald that we all knew was actually Harvey, the Russian-speaking Oswald, whose name probably was Alec Heidel. That was the name that the rifle was ordered in at the FBI-monitored P.O. box in Dallas. That gun, by the way, was found in the garage and later planted at the Texas School Book Depository, and that comes from no less than Deputy Sheriff Roger Craig, who was on the scene when the German Mauser was produced from behind the bookcases. So we know that the Italian Mannlicher Carcano that Oswald allegedly ordered was not the murder weapon and was not found up there either and wasn't even announced until the next day. Now, we've got Harvey, who speaks fluent Russian, leaving the States and going to Russia in 1959, marrying Marina, establishing a Marxist character for himself. He's also on the streets in August of 1963 when he's back in the States, passing out Fair Play for Cuba brochures on the streets, and there's a slight fight and skirmish that breaks out there, and he gets jailed for a minute. Then he goes on television, and I have those videos right here in my library of him speaking to the police in the police station, and there's no trace whatsoever of a Southern drawl, let alone that very distinguishable New Orleans Cajun accent that almost anybody can spot anywhere in the country. It's almost just a signature. It's easy to spot somebody from New Orleans, as you well know. That's the difference. So we had Lee, who joins the Marines and ends up being CIA and working behind the scenes. We have Harvey, who is the patsy with the Russian wife.
Were they actually brothers?
No, they look enough alike to be. Harvey was certainly of Russian parentage, may or may not have been born in this country, but in either case, his parents were Russian immigrants somewhere around 1940. And consequently, he grew up speaking both English and Russian in the home. Marguerite, by the way, and this is my clue, Marguerite, the short and dumpy, unattractive one, I don't think was Harvey's mother at all. I believe that she was his adoptive mother. I believe the Russian parents were bought off somehow or killed, who knows, because she had him when he was very young, like 12, 13 years old. She had him already under his control. So I think they must have been paid off very handsomely to disappear. That's something I think we will never know, but I suspect their name was Heidel.
How high up in the federal government did the conspiracy go?
All the way to the top. There was rogue CIA agents that actually were pulling it off, but more and more information is coming out all the time about the instrumentality that Lyndon Johnson was. First of all, getting the motorcade and troop down to Texas, Charles Cabell was an Air Force general who was fired by JFK in 61, along with Alan Dulles, who was director of CIA. They both hated JFK very much. Well, guess who the mayor of Dallas is in 1963? Earl Cabell, Charles's brother, the man who changed the motorcade route in order to take it past the school book depository where it had not been booked to go 2 days before. So how high does it go? As high as you can imagine. The cover-up is what makes that obvious. Lyndon Johnson handpicked the Warren Commission to include J. Edgar Hoover, his neighbor, his nightly drinking buddy, who together hated the Kennedys, both of them, with a passion. And with Hoover on the Warren Commission, one lie could be supplied tomorrow for the one that the guy told yesterday and got caught at.
What about media coverage? Do you believe media were involved in the cover-up?
I think media were used at that time. They certainly have been involved in the cover-up in recent years. You take somebody like a Bill O'Reilly, who wrote that piece of fiction called Killing Kennedy just recently. Now they're going to make a movie out of it, and it's going to be out on the National Geographic Channel sometime in November, just in time to propagandize Americans again. But they're talking about the single Oswald. And as I said, and I've said in my book, I've said for about 10 years now, on the back cover it says, the 21st century writers that refer to a singular Lee Harvey Oswald distort their own content and deceive their readers with antiquated data. And that's exactly what's been happening, really, for the last 25 years, when the media certainly have known better. But they want to call us conspiracy theorists. And that's just a great piece of subterfuge. Nobody knows that any better than you, Brent. One of the proudest compliments I ever got was on when I wrote Everything You Ever Told Me Was a Lie, and somebody did a review on the internet and said, Shannon is not a conspiracy theorist, he's a conspiracy scientist. Oh, I like that.
If I'm hearing you correctly, while you do believe media has been complicit in the last quarter century, at the time you think media was mostly just used but was not actually complicit in the cover-up?
Yes, I think so. Mort Saul, who was a comedian at the time, got very involved back in the 60s. In fact, he was even deputized by Jim Garrison, the New Orleans district attorney. And Mort Saul actually got blackballed because of this. Henry Luce told him at dinner that integrity is something I left at Yale. The very, very phony picture of Oswald standing in his back gate, holding a rifle and a pistol on his belt. He's holding Izvestia and the Russian literature in his hands. When he was shown that picture of him in jail on Saturday, November 23rd of 63, he immediately said, that's a phony, it's a fake, that's my head on somebody else's shoulders.
Will the American people ever really know the true story about the murder of JFK?
I think not. I think my book right now, the one that we're talking about, the JFK assassination and the uncensored story of the two Oswalds, and we certainly have uncensored it, thanks to John Armstrong, but I think it'll probably be the most suppressed book of the year and probably next year too. I cannot imagine them wanting to cover this. On the other hand, if we could get this word out and get enough people to want to read it through people like you, then, heck, I guess it could be a million seller. It should be, because it's the first one to tell the truth. It's going to be the only one out there between now and November 22nd, countering the propaganda from the news media.
You wrote that the perpetrators of this heinous crime got away with it. Is that true? There is no statute of limitations on murder, so isn't it still possible that those responsible for JFK's assassination will be brought to justice?
No, because most of them are already dead. There's Jim Files in Stateville, in Illinois State Prison in Joliet, who's already claimed he was one of the guys behind the fence. Charles Nicoletti, a mobster that he drove for and worked for. Files was only 21 years old in 1963. Nicoletti is dead. You've got so many people, and Jim Mars has put a chapter in my book on all of them that got wiped out early. But the interesting ones to me are like George Demuranchelt, who was CIA handler, good friend of George Bush's, because he was Russian-speaking, took care of Oswald when he was in Dallas and kind of led him around and was his handler, really. But Demuranchelt avoided the Warren Commission, as several of these people did, because Warren Commission was very, very careful to be involved in the cover-up and to cover it up. But by 1976 and 7 and 8, when the House Select Committee began that second national investigation and hearings, and they absolved everybody. In fact, they said that indeed there was a shot from the front, and there were some shots from the back, and therefore there had to be a conspiracy. But then he turned around and absolved everybody, and Garrison said, well, now it seems to be that the picture that the U.S. government holds is that Lee Harvey Oswald murdered John F. Kennedy with 3 shots from the rear and 1 shot from the front.
That's a neat trick if you can do that.
Yeah, but anyway, that appears to be the government's conclusion. So, no, I don't think that we're going to ever see the whole truth officially. I do believe we have seen the whole truth already. And as far as bringing anybody to justice, there's just nobody left, Brent. So the point I was making about de Morenschild and so many others, that the week before de Morenschild was to appear in the House Select Committee Commission in Washington, he suicided. This just seems to be the CIA way. They're going to have to kill themselves so they can't testify. That's why there are so few left. They've been taken care of before they could testify. Take a guy like Jim Files, who's in jail. He's still alive because he was never called to testify. People ask me, how come you're still alive? How come they haven't taken you out? Because I can't hurt them. I can only report what others reported, but I can't get on the witness stand and say, I saw him pull the trigger and shoot the president. That's why we reporters tend to survive even when we don't go with the official line.
What do you hope people will take away from the experience of reading this book?
The truth. I want the world to know how much they've been deceived, and I think that Americans are much more attuned now than, say, they were 50 years ago or even 20 years ago because they realize the deception. So we have Americans that are learning what you and I figured out years ago. I don't think the guy on the street believes in much of anything about the government anymore. I think there's so much doubt out there.
So your readers then are exposed to the information in the book. They learn the truth. What are they to do with it?
Well, now, there's a very good question, once again, because we're 50 years late. If this had been exposed 40 years ago or 45 years ago, it probably would have come tumbling down because JFK was a very popular president. John F. Kennedy got killed because he wasn't one of them. He was not the establishment. John F. Kennedy was killed because he thought he was president. He found out that there were powers a lot higher than he.
How do people get a copy of the book?
Probably the best way, just shoot me an email right now because the website is under construction and this may or may not be in there yet. I'll give you the website, www.patshannon.us, and Shannon is S-H-A-N-N-A-N. And my other books are on there as well. If you want to use PayPal or just shoot me a note, it's going to be $25 shipping and handling within the States, and you'll have to add another 10 to get it if you're overseas. But just shoot me an email note at shannonpat, S-H-A-N-N-A-N-P-A-T, @gmail.com. Just shoot me a note at shannonpat@gmail.com. I'll be able to direct you to PayPal or the website or what kind of credit card you might want to use. It'll be $25 shipping and handling included in the States. It's a real bargain.
Excellent. How long is the book? How many pages?
It's going to be 160 pages in 6x9 with lots of pictures and lots of proof. 160 plus, we've added a couple of things, and I must tell you about one of the additions. I have received a letter that we're going to put in the appendix from one of the people who grew up and went to school with Harvey Oswald. And I have a letter from him to David Lifton. You may remember Lifton wrote Best Evidence. He was another expert who was fooled because he was an expert when it came to examining the wounds and the rearrangement of the wounds in the president's head. The fact that the body was moved to Walter Reed and then to Bethesda Naval Hospital. The body and the wounds and the autopsy report were all monkeyed with, and David Lifton became one of the experts. He must have sold 1 million copies of Best Evidence. But he also was fooled and didn't understand there were two Oswalds and really made a fool of himself in a letter that he wrote and an interview he did with the one Palmer McBride. Palmer McBride just died this past April. He was Oswald's friend. And I have a letter from him back to David Lifton that's going to just knock your socks off and put one more nail in the coffin of those who never believed that there were two Oswalds. Because David Lifton made it obvious that there was, and he didn't mean to do it.
The book is The JFK Assassination and the Uncensored Story of the Two Oswalds. The author is Pat Shannon, my guest. His website, www.patshannon.us. You can send him an email at shannonpat@gmail.com. Pat, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, and I wish you the very, very best with this publication. My own attitude is that everything we're doing is we're trying to get more of the truth out to the general population, and you've certainly done your share of it over the years. Thanks so much for writing this book.
Thank you very much, Brent, for having me on, and I will see that you get a copy also, and maybe you can talk about it again sometime.
Pat Shannon, The JFK Assassination, and the Uncensored Story of the Two Oswalds.
Thank you for listening to this edition of The Voice of Freedom. Opinions expressed are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the views of Truth and Freedom Radio Networks, Freedom Broadcast Group Incorporated, or our sponsors. For more information about your freedoms and liberties, or to contact Brent, just log on to our website at www.freedomradio.us or call 1-888-385-3733. Join us next time for another lesson in liberty on The Voice of Freedom.
America, land of the free, right to life and liberty. Open your eyes and you will see that America is still the land of the free.